So where do you park then?
Blog Talk Radio. It's hump day. So why does it feel like frump day? Are you barely making it through the week with no energy to speak of? That's all about to change. Welcome to Transforming Health with Brad King. Get ready to live with the vitality, youthfulness, and abundant energy you've always dreamed of. Now, here's your host, Brad.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of Transforming Health. And why are so many people sailing at half mast these days? Worse yet, how many of these people have been living this way for so long, they don't remember what optimal health and vitality even feels like anymore? You know, too many individuals suffer from a condition. It's a condition of acceptance. They're guilty of accepting their less than healthy status as the way it is. Well, unfortunately, they don't know any other way to be. Well, not anymore. Welcome to Transforming Health. I'm Brad King, your host, and this is the platform that helps change lives one body at a time. The interesting thing is, as we learn more and more about the human body and its interactions with its environment, it really becomes increasingly apparent that our lifestyle and dietary choices are likely far more important to our health than even our genetic makeup. You know, many scientists would agree that the choices that we make every single day can determine up to 80% of our health status, which means that less than 20% of our ailments are really genetically ordained. And yes, even the ones that determine your ability to store your excess body fat. In other words, our genes are nothing more than templates upon which we build our unique life experiences. And those experiences, and this is good news, are largely up to you. Now, while our genetic codes may be fixed, their expressions are not. Genetic expression changes constantly. It adapts to diet, lifestyle, and environment. And really, the take-home message is it's up to you whether you choose to express your genes towards things like a lean physique with abundant health or towards excess body fat and illness. For millions of people worldwide, consuming the main staple of our diet, I'm talking about grains here, may be creating an internal environment that is conducive to obesity and disease, and one that makes it almost impossible to use our own fat for energy. We've been told to eat less of the processed grains and white foods and more of the so-called healthier grains like whole wheat, but what if these so-called healthier grains weren't much better than the overly processed white foods to begin with? What if these foods were slowly breaking down your body and in the process triggering things like an immune system attack that involves abdominal cramping, gas, chronic diarrhea, constipation, possibly both, even obesity? What if these foods that you've been told to eat more of by your very own governments were actually one of the main causes of the obesity epidemic itself? What then? Well, today on Transforming Health, gluten sensitivities and the main problems that they create. Today's guest is a board-certified cardiologist who happens to practice and teach about the prevention of heart disease through lifestyle alterations, including dietary changes, rather than through pharmaceutical means alone. In addition to writing, speaking, and practicing on preventative cardiology from his practice in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, he is the medical director and the founder of the Track Your Plaque program for heart disease prevention and reversal. So without further ado, please welcome the best-selling author, I should say the mega best-selling author of Wheat Belly. Lose the wheat, lose the belly, and find your path back to health. We have the one and only Dr. William Davis with us. Dr. Davis, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling fabulous, Brad. Thank you.
Well, you know, we've got so much to discuss in a relatively short period of time, so we're going to get right into it. And I've got to ask you this. I mean, you know, how does a practicing conventionally trained cardiologist come to write a book on the dangers of excess wheat? Where did this begin?
Well, the big turning point for me, Brad, was a few years back. So this is a heart disease prevention practice. That is my office practice. And I became so concerned that so many people, I'm sure you see this too, so many people are diabetic or pre-diabetic. And 80% of people I see were already diabetic or pre-diabetic by the time I met them. And so I used an incredibly simple line of logic, and that is two slices of whole wheat bread raise blood sugar higher, that is, have a higher glycemic index, than nearly all other foods. That simple fact is often just not mentioned by your friendly dietitian. Two slices of whole wheat bread raise blood sugar higher than nearly all other foods.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Including table sugar and including lots of candy bars. So I use simple logic. If that's true, and all these people have diabetes and prediabetes defined by high blood sugars, let's take this food out. Let's see what happens. So people would do that, and they'd come back 3 months later, and their blood sugars would indeed be lower, fasting blood sugars, hemoglobin A1C, that long-term measure of blood sugar. But they told me all these other stories, like, I lost 30 pounds in 3 months. I'm not hungry anymore. My rheumatoid arthritis is so much better, it allowed me to stop two drugs. My acid reflux that was annoying every day, I had to take two medicines, went away. It's gone. My irritable bowel syndrome, cramps, and diarrhea is gone. The leg swelling I had for years, I had to take diuretics on and off, went away. Migraine headaches I had every day for 10 years, had to take medicines every day, stopped within 2 days. In other words, I saw so many of these crazy phenomena. At first, I told people, gee, that's a crazy coincidence. How can it possibly be a relationship with wheat or stopping wheat? But it kept on happening. And then I started doing it on purpose for those other problems, and lo and behold, so darn many, an incredible spectrum, in fact, of varied and diverse conditions go away or at least improve dramatically.
So, Dr. Dave, it's obviously way too much to consider being just a coincidence, so to speak. Obviously, if you're looking at this in your medical practice, and you know, you would be trained to be a little skeptical to begin with, so you would have to be very much sold on this dietary change in order to, number one, recommend it to your patients, but number two, actually want to write an entire book about this.
See, there's also very objective evidence. For instance, the reversal of diabetes. When somebody's on two or three drugs and now they're on no drugs with blood sugars that are better than they were on the drugs, or, you know, the number one cause for heart disease, in my view, this is very, very prevalent, is the small LDL particle abnormality.
Right.
Triggered by carbohydrate exposure, but particularly the amylopectin A of wheat. Well, you see that number drop to the floor when you eliminate wheat. So a typical number would be 2,000 nanomoles per liter of small LDL particles. You take wheat out of the diet, it drops to 100 or 200. In other words, we're talking about not a little bit of change, like 5 or 10 or 15%. We're talking about 90% changes. In other words, very, very clear-cut and reproducible phenomena that you witness over and over and over.
So, Dr. Davis, this is interesting because, you know, and we've done a lot of shows on heart disease. You know, we've had world-renowned cardiologists come on the show. Some tell us it doesn't even matter what your cholesterol is, never mind LDL, HDL, VLDL. It just doesn't matter at all. Cholesterol is a very important molecule. However, as you mentioned, there is a lot of research out there showing it really does matter the type of cholesterol we produce, and yet we're being told not to eat foods like egg yolks that contain cholesterol and shellfish that contain cholesterol because it's just going to dump the cholesterol within our bodies. But really, the research is telling us something different because what you're mentioning here is the body is responsible for manufacturing its own cholesterol, especially when it has the message of excess sugar.
Yeah, that's right. If you focus on cholesterol, you will be misled, and you'll be led down false paths like take statin drugs, that's the path to all health. That's absurd. We want to know what kinds of particles and the sorts of fats and proteins, et cetera, that occur in the bloodstream that could lead to the accumulation of atherosclerosis. And if you look at the particles, so-called lipoprotein particles, lipid-carrying proteins, that's where you find out you start to understand how heart disease really is caused. So this notion of cholesterol causing heart disease is a, I call that the kindergarten version of heart disease causation. That's not how heart disease is caused.
Right.
But it has been very profitable.
Well, and here, you know, here's the interesting thing. You're trained as a cardiologist, and yet you're noticing that diabetes is in a sense being reversed by removing a staple of our North American diet, which is bread, and all of these gluten-containing foods. And we'll talk about that in a second, because people, I think, will be amazed what really does contain gluten. But getting back to reversing or even controlling a diabetic condition, your blood sugar being elevated, people have no idea what that means in terms of heart disease itself. So can you just walk us through when people get older, number one, their insulin is starting to increase. We exacerbate that by eating these types of foods. And what does the blood sugar, the excess blood sugar we see in pre-diabetes and diabetes, what does that have to do with a practice such as yours?
Well, the high blood sugars, let's say a blood sugar of 170, after two slices of whole wheat bread, which is very typical, by the way, in a non-diabetic. This is just everyday people with no diabetes or pre-diabetes. A blood sugar of 170 after two slices of whole wheat bread in a sandwich, say. That does several things. One, it occurs alongside the formation of small LDL particles. So high blood sugars perfectly parallel the formation of small LDL. So if you're triggering high blood sugar, you're triggering small LDL particle formation. Small LDL particles are a very different kind of particle than the large. It's not just a matter of size. We use size to identify it, but size really marks this thing as a very, very different animal in the bloodstream. It's much more adherent. It's poorly recognized by the liver. It doesn't get taken up. In fact, it's very well recognized by inflammatory cells. Small LDL is almost this perfectly crafted little monster to create heart disease. There's a fundamental process, though, when blood sugars go high, and that's the process of glycation or glucose modification of proteins. So glycation is fundamental to aging and to diseases. So if I have a high blood glucose of, say, 170 after two slices of whole wheat bread, I glycate the proteins in the lenses of my eyes. I get cataracts over time.
Right.
I glycate the cartilage cells in my cartilage. I get brittle cartilage followed by arthritis. Small LDL particles are eightfold more glycation prone than the large, more benign LDL particles. When they can become glycated, they're much more prone to oxidation. So one of the fundamental processes that leads to plaque, atherosclerotic plaque in the arteries, is glycoxidation, glycated, oxidized, small LDL particles. In other words, having people cut their fat, cut their cholesterol, eat more healthy whole grains creates this perfect storm of disaster.
And yet we're being told the complete opposite. You're listening to Transforming Health, and we are interviewing today Dr. William Davis. The book is called Wheat Belly, Lose the Wheat, Lose the Belly, and Find Your Path Back to Health. We're going to be talking about what exactly is this gluten sensitivity, and really what's the difference between an allergy and an actual sensitivity. You're going to be surprised. We will be right back with more on this incredibly important subject right after these messages.
Did you know that the environment may play an ever-increasing role in a sluggish metabolism, which can lead to reduced energy and weight gain? The good news is that the Ultimate Her Energy and Ultimate Male Energy can help combat these negative effects. Please visit www.awakenyourbody.com to find out how you can once again look, feel, and perform in a youthful manner. Are you in pain? Do you want more energy? A stronger immune system? Rarely does nature reveal a therapeutic agent so incredible that medical researchers and the people who try it are astounded by its health-enhancing benefits. Introducing Leaf Source, a mineral product that is derived from a 100% natural, organic, prehistoric seabed deposit. To find out how Leaf Source can help you, visit www.leafsource.com. This is Transforming Health with host Brad King. Our program will open up your youthful energy potential and help you live a disease-free life of abundant energy and vitality. Now, back to the program.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Transforming Health. You know, we spend more than $33 billion a year annually on these weight loss products and services. We skip from one fad diet to the next, and you know what? None of them seem to work. In the short term, we may lose a few pounds, and how many of us even ask ourselves, where is the majority of that weight coming from? We really do need to differentiate where weight comes from on the body, because we only should be concentrating on losing body fat, especially not the lean body mass that for a very large extent controls the metabolic engines of the human body, dictates how many calories we're actually able to utilize over a 24-hour period. You know, over the long term, only about 5% of dieters manage to keep off the lost weight, and the majority who don't, they're actually chagrined to find themselves fatter than they were before they even started dieting. When are we going to wake up and realize that the answer to obesity is more than caloric restriction and fat phobia? We are losing this battle of the bulge big time, and yet we won't admit it, and we're perversely hoping against all odds that the next diet will be the last one we ever go on. If you continue a pattern of weight loss attempts without understanding first which foods are causing the majority of the problems, you're setting yourself up for failure and, worse yet, possibly even illness and disease. Please welcome back the best-selling author of Wheat Belly, Lose the Wheat, Lose the Belly, and Find Your Path Back to Health, Dr. William Davis. Dr. Davis, I want to talk about, because we banter this word around called food allergies, and then we hear about food intolerances and food sensitivities. And, you know, I want to really get the, first of all, you know, understand the difference between the two, because an allergy, in my opinion, is a reaction from your immune system that has to do with something you ate that was perceived by the body to be an invader. And generally, the reaction is so profound and so severe, such as something we know of anaphylactic shock, that there's no doubt about an allergic offender. But a food sensitivity is different than a food allergy, and I was hoping you can touch on that before we move on.
Well, let me make a point, and that is what I'm talking about is not so much gluten sensitivity, but wheat. In other words, this is not gluten elimination for the gluten sensitive. That's an important issue for a segment of the population. This is wheat elimination for everybody, because there's a lot more to this plant, this modern thing they've created in the genetics laboratory called wheat, because, as you know, it's not the wheat of 1,000 years ago,
sure,
or even 50 years ago. It's a short, stocky, semi-dwarf variant created by geneticists. This thing is very different, but it contains multiple components besides gluten. Gluten is the focus for a lot of people. They buy gluten-free foods, but that is not the issue here. This is really about all the other things in wheat. And so each of those components is responsible for a different kind of intolerance. We could call it allergy. We could call it intestinal leak. We could call it an immune-mediated reaction. Allergy in the strictest sense means a response mediated by the IgE, immunoglobulin E class of antibodies. So that actually, there is such a thing as wheat allergy. Sadly, that term is used too loosely, and most wheat intolerances have nothing to do with allergy. So typically, for instance, acid reflux, which is probably caused, by the way, by the lectins in wheat, and not an IgE-mediated reaction, has nothing to do with allergy. It's probably just intestinal disruption, or it might even be a disruption in the composition of bacteria in the intestinal tract. So, unfortunately, that's often called wheat allergy. Or people who have positive anti-gliadin antibodies, that is, antibodies against a component of gluten, are often called wheat allergic. That's not allergy. It's a form of wheat intolerance. It might even be related to a form of celiac disease. So the whole notion of wheat allergy, unfortunately, is used very loosely, and most so-called wheat allergies are not allergies, but various forms of intolerance.
Okay, so Dr. Davis, when we're talking about that, and we need to define that a little more, because it used to be thought that only those with, as you mentioned, the celiac disease, and a lot of people would say, well, I don't suffer from celiac disease, so this doesn't even affect me, you know, in any way. But these were the people that were affected by, let's just call it gluten-induced damage. However, there's a lot of research, you point this out in your book, that has really raised questions whether gluten should be eaten by anybody. And as you mentioned, wheat in general, because there's a lot more going on with wheat. But this, you know, this is a relatively new protein in the human diet. It's only appeared since the agricultural revolution, obviously. And many scientists believe that our bodies were not designed to handle this near constant onslaught of all of these things the body has never had before. So when we talk about the wheat allergies or the wheat sensitivities, what foods in particular are you really talking about? Because wheat, a lot of people would say, oh, okay, well, I don't need to eat white or whole wheat bread, but I can eat everything else.
Yeah, so that's right. It's bread, of course, but it's also pizza, ciabatta, cookies, cakes, pretzels, crackers, rolls, donuts, bagels, pancakes, waffles, and virtually every processed food on the store shelves. Now, in other words, the food manufacturers have seen fit to add wheat in some form to almost every processed food. And by the way, this may sound a bit cynical, but I believe that's on purpose, because there's a fundamental behavior to understand about wheat, and that is the gliadin protein. The gliadin protein unique to wheat that was also changed dramatically by the genetic changes introduced over the last 40 years. There's more of it, and it's different. It's a very potent appetite stimulant. And people who consume gliadin protein in the form of wheat increase their calorie intake 400 calories per day. People who take wheat out of the diet, even with no restriction of calories or portion size or anything, reduce their calorie intake by 400 calories per day. So that's a very important aspect of the whole wheat conversation, that this thing increases appetite. You know, I got to believe, Brad, that the food industry, they have some smart people on the payroll.
Oh, yeah.
Scientists, they've got to, if you and I figured this out, I'm sure they figured this out, too. And so if you want to increase revenues, you put wheat in your products. Now, it's 400 calories per day times 365 days per year times 300 million people. We're not talking about a small phenomenon. We're talking about incredible phenomenon.
Well, you know what's interesting about that? You know, there's a lot of research showing we have, you know, a metabolic decline just going through the aging process for many reasons. One of them could be that we lose such a significant portion of our lean body mass. But the point is, it's believed that we have the ability to not be able to process, let's say, roughly 300 calories more from the time of, let's say, we were in our 20s to the time we're in our 40s, and that would equate, if we did nothing else, just with the math, that would equate to well over 30 pounds of body fat every single year. And now you're talking about an extra 100 calories. That's not even aside from the fact that our metabolisms are declining because we're getting older. Now you're talking about, you know, 400 extra calories on top of that if people eat these types of foods. And one of the important things that you really just said there was these companies are not hiring nutritional scientists to design their foods. They're hiring marketing experts, and they're hiring people that understand what causes us to want to, not even want, what causes us to need to have to buy those foods. And really, it's addiction. We know that sugar is addictive, but you've also pointed out that there are ingredients found in wheat that actually cause an almost euphoric feeling with us and do create an addictive behavior. Can you talk about that?
Sure. That's, once again, the gliadin protein. The gliadin protein is degraded to a group of small molecules that were dubbed by the National Institutes of Health researchers in the U.S., the NIH researchers, dubbed them exorphins, externally ingested morphine-like compounds. So this didn't come from some alternative clinic in Spokane. This comes from the NIH. They want to know, by the way, they want to know why people who have paranoid schizophrenia, who consume wheat, have worsening delusions and auditory hallucinations. Well, they drilled it down to these exorphins that come from consumption of the gliadin protein in wheat. So the exorphins have the unique capacity to cross into the brain and bind the opiate or morphine receptors. This almost sounds like it's too much to even believe, but there is a drug company that has made application to the FDA in the U.S. for naltrexone. Naltrexone is an opiate-blocking drug. It's already on the market being used by heroin addicts to block their use of heroin, but they're trying to market it for use in weight loss, and it works. In their clinical trials, if you give a non-heroin-addicted person this opiate-blocking drug, naltrexone, their appetite goes down, their calorie consumption goes down 400 calories per day, a very familiar theme, by the way, and you lose 22 pounds in the first 6 months. Now, why would an opiate-blocking drug work? There's only one food that generates substantial quantities of opiates in the bloodstream, and that's this gliadin protein of wheat that degraded to exorphins.
Okay, so interesting stuff, and I mean, you know, this is well known in scientific circles, especially in the nutritional field. However, not enough people are talking about it. Not enough people are explaining it to the degree that you've explained it. And when we talk about this, I think it's very important for people to understand that, you know, you spoke about a lot of foods that people would just naturally know are foods we shouldn't be eating a lot of. We shouldn't be eating bread, pies, cakes, breakfast cereals, porridge, cookies, pizza, pasta. But what about the so-called healthier alternatives that we're being told to now? Hey, you know, don't eat the processed grains. Eat more of the whole grains.
Well, I remind everybody that we have a big problem in Canada and the U.S., and that is two-thirds of all adults now are either diabetic or pre-diabetic. Two-thirds are either obese or overweight. So we're not talking about diet that is appropriate for a 22-year-old slender marathon-running premenopausal female. We're talking about diet that's appropriate to stop this incredible disaster that's been created of obesity, overweight, diabetes, pre-diabetes. So we've got to limit carbohydrates in order to unwind that process. So Wheat Belly is not a diet book. It's an articulation of this incredible big problem that's been created by the geneticists that no one's telling anybody about.
Well, and we're going to be talking about that when we come back on the second half of Transforming Health, which you've been listening to for the past half hour now. We're talking about a very, very important subject here of a sensitivity to wheat, possibly such a sensitivity that this may be one of the primary reasons why the majority of the population finds it next to impossible to lose their excess weight, but also how easy it is to gain it. My guest today is the author of Wheat Belly, Lose the Wheat, Lose the Belly, and Find Your Path Back to Health, Dr. William Davis, and we will be back after these messages. Do not go anywhere.
Are you in pain? Do you want more energy? A stronger immune system? Rarely does nature reveal a therapeutic agent so incredible that medical researchers and the people who try it are astounded by its health-enhancing benefits. Introducing Leaf Source, a mineral product that is derived from a 100% natural, organic, prehistoric seabed deposit. To find out how Leaf Source can help you, visit www.leafsource.com. Did you know that the environment may play an ever-increasing role in a sluggish metabolism, which can lead to reduced energy and weight gain? The good news is that the Ultimate Her Energy and Ultimate Male Energy can help combat these negative effects. Please visit www.awakenyourbody.com to find out how you can once again look, feel, and perform in a youthful manner. Is Transforming Health with host Brad King. Our program will open up your youthful energy potential and help you live a disease-free life of abundant energy and vitality. Now, back to the program.
Hey everyone, Welcome back to the second half of probably one of the most important topics we could have covered here today, because it affects the great majority of the population. We're talking about a sensitivity to one of the major staples of our diet here in North America. One-third of women, a quarter of men, are either starting or finishing the latest diet of the week at any given time. The reason we are on so many fad diets is because we are over-the-top confused as to how we got to our present state of obesity, and most importantly, what the heck do we do to get lean and healthy again? Our fat cells are so good at outsmarting us because they've been honing their strategies for millennia. Back in the days before agriculture and well before the refrigerator and mini marts, humans were hunter-gatherers. We foraged for nuts and berries, and we enjoyed the occasional meal of wild game. It was really a feast or famine world, and we survived by eating as much as we could when food was plentiful. We also stored any extra calories in the form of fat when the food was not as plentiful. Even though we've managed to eradicate this so-called feast or famine cycle in much of the world, our bodies really haven't changed their tactics very much, and they're not going to anytime soon. Many of you may remember the doctors Mary and Dan Eads, the best-selling authors of Protein Power, and they once said, "We're living with Fred Flintstone bodies, but we're living in this George Jetson world." If we're going to be successful at lifelong fat loss, we've got to work in harmony with these so-called caveman bodies, which means avoiding some of the foods that have not been around long enough for our bodies to adapt to, genetically speaking. And one of the largest offenders of all is found in wheat. And yes, a lot of you know this is gluten, which is the primary protein that's found in grains, wheat, rye, oats, barley. The list goes on. Today's guest is a board-certified cardiologist. He happens to practice and teach about prevention of heart disease through lifestyle alterations, including dietary changes, rather than through pharmaceutical means. Once again, please welcome back the best-selling author of Wheat Belly, Lose the Wheat, Lose the Belly, and Find Your Path Back to Health, Dr. William Davis. Dr. Davis, before we go any further, why don't you discuss with the listeners what are some of these symptoms of, we can call it wheat sensitivity, because that would probably encompass it a lot more.
Sure. As you know, Brad, it can take on so many different forms. Wheat intolerance could show up as headaches, migraine headaches. It could show up as acid reflux, the regurgitation of acid into the esophagus. It could show up as irritable bowel syndrome. Arthritis is very common, particularly arthritis in the fingers and wrists. That seems to be very, very characteristic of a wheat-related type of joint pain. Water retention is very common. Mostly ladies have water in their legs. I've even seen heart failure, which is part of heart failure, is water retention. I've seen that improve in people with heart failure. Arthritis improves. Inflammatory diseases.
What about brain disorders? What about some of the more common problems we're noticing with cognitive function?
The more benign end would be the sleepiness, mental fog, anxiety. Those are very common, and those lift when you stop wheat. But then there's a very wide spectrum of phenomena that wheat can provoke in the brain, and it goes anywhere from those more benign forms like sleepiness and mental fog to the more serious forms like ataxias, which is the loss of balance and loss of bladder control, peripheral neuropathies where you lose control and muscle control in your legs, and even gluten encephalopathy, dementia from wheat.
Wow. Dr. Davis, how common is it for someone to have one or more of these symptoms? Like, would you say the majority of people that have sensitivities to wheat, which is, once again, the majority of the population, would you say the majority of us are experiencing things, but we're just not tying it back to the wheat? Or is it relatively, not the majority of people wouldn't really experience anything, so they wouldn't really know what was going on in their own bodies?
Absolutely. The vast majority of people have no idea that they're taking blood pressure medicines, acid reflux medications, and the pain they've been having in their hands, wrists, and knees is nothing more than the bagel you've been having every morning. So these go away when you take the wheat out of the diet more often than not.
How quickly do they dissipate?
Depends on the syndrome you're experiencing, but typically within a couple of days. I mean, it's very quick. And by the way, there's an on-again, off-again phenomenon. Let's say you're a guy with very bad arthritis. You stop the wheat, and within 3 to 5 days, you are completely pain-free. Your joints are flexible, and they feel wonderful. And then it's been 3 months. You feel wonderful. You just have a slice of pizza right back.
You know what's so interesting about that? You and I had a little conversation off the air before we came on with the interview, and I was mentioning to you that I had a healthier pizza last night. I just had a craving for it, and you know I have a very good diet the majority of the time. I do not eat any wheat products, but it was just one of those things. I wanted to have it, and I have had ongoing shoulder problems because I used to lift a lot of weight when I was a lot younger, and I used to compete, and you know they've dissipated over many, many months. I just get them very sporadically. And my shoulder pain today has come back, and the only thing I did different was having that pizza last night, and that's a healthier pizza than the great majority of people have. So, you know, do you think it was because of that? Do you think that's why I'm experiencing this excess inflammation today?
I wouldn't be surprised. I've seen it happen many, many times. People who have been pain-free for a long time, it comes right back.
Right.
Even with a few breadcrumbs. It doesn't take much.
And how many people would actually make that association, would link that up? Because for the average person out there that really doesn't know that much about nutrition, here they go and they eat something like, for instance, for breakfast they'll have some toast, and then all of a sudden at 6 o'clock at night they get a flare-up of their arthritis. The majority of people would never tie that back to what they had for breakfast.
Exactly. And this becomes most graphically illustrated in people who have gone wheat-free, who then say, you know what, I didn't realize how awful I used to feel because now I feel like I'm 20 years old again.
Unbelievable. So tell us how this program that you've put together, because I don't really want to call it a diet, because when people mention the word diet, usually think of a short-term solution to a lifelong problem. This is, I would imagine, a way of life, because you're removing a food that nobody needs and nobody actually should be eating in the first place. But how really is your approach all that different from, let's say, the paleo diet, for instance?
Well, I think there are a lot of diets that overlap. As you point out, wheat belly is not a diet. It's a description of what's wrong with wheat. Do the genetics work. But the paleo diet overlaps a lot with what I say. The low-carbohydrate diets overlap a lot. The Atkins diet, the South Beach diet. We could put any number of labels on these things. One of the common tripping points I see, though, such as in the low-carb movement, people will say, I limit my carbohydrates. I have no sugars. I limit my fruits. And the only carbohydrates I have are some healthy whole grains. It's very, very common in people on low-carb or even paleo-type approach. They say, I only have, because this message we're bombarded with to have some healthy whole grains comes through. And people do that, and they don't obtain the benefits they're looking for. Weight loss stalls. They might even gain weight. They still have arthritis, leg edema, other problems because of the inclusion of this thing. But I think what's interesting about all this, Brad, is a lot of us are coming to the same conclusions from a variety of different directions. The CrossFit paleo people are coming to these same conclusions. The low-carb people are. The Atkins, in other words, there's a lot of us all pointing fingers in the same direction.
Sure.
And I think you know that when we look at all these diets, they're becoming remarkably similar.
So let's talk about vegetarians and vegans for a second, because these, in my opinion, would be the worst offenders when it comes to eating a lot of grains in their diet, because they've got to be very inventive with what they take in when they're doing away with the majority of the animal-based food. So, and I know a lot of them do a very good job with it, but how many vegans and vegetarians do you see, you know, overly consuming these wheat-based foods, and what is that doing to them?
I see that a lot when people just starting out, because being a vegan or vegetarian, as you know, is tougher. Your food choices naturally are much more limited, and so they logically turn to grains to fill in those calories. But I see those people have lots of problems. they can have incapacitating arthritis, for instance, from their excessive wheat consumption. They have diabetes, pre-diabetes, just like anybody else. They have a small LDL marker and other markers of disordered metabolism. So, unfortunately, just being vegetarian does not protect you from the evils of this grain.
Okay, well, we've got so much more to discuss, and we're running out of time, obviously, in this segment here, so I'd like to save all of this for the last segment, which is coming up in a few minutes. We've got Dr. William Davis with us. Wheat Belly is the book. Lose the wheat, lose the belly, and find your path back to health. Just such an important book, and when we come back, I want to talk to Dr. Davis about children, because children are so susceptible to dietary changes due to their, you know, constantly evolving, growing physiology, and what's happening when you give your children these processed breakfast cereals just because they're, you know, it's just much faster and much more convenient. We're going to find out when we come back. We've got a lot more to talk about on Transforming Health with Brad King. We'll be right back.
Are you in pain? Do you want more energy? A stronger immune system? Rarely does nature reveal a therapeutic agent so incredible that medical researchers and the people who try it are astounded by its health-enhancing benefits. Introducing Leaf Source, a mineral product that is derived from a 100% natural, organic, prehistoric seabed deposit. To find out how Leaf Source can help you, visit www.leafsource.com. Did you know that the environment may play an ever-increasing role in a sluggish metabolism, which can lead to reduced energy and weight gain? The good news is that the Ultimate Her Energy and Ultimate Male Energy can help combat these negative effects. Please visit www.awakenyourbody.com to find out how you can once again look, feel, and perform in a youthful manner. Is Transforming Health with host Brad King. Our program will open up your youthful energy potential and help you live a disease-free life of abundant energy and vitality. Now, back to the program.
Everyone, welcome back to the final segment of Transforming Health for today, not forever. Very, very important subject today, and an incredible researcher we have on, as well as an incredible book. Obesity rates have tripled since our health experts warned us. This was in the 1950s. They told us to lose weight by eating less fat and exercising more. In fact, despite all of our diets, North Americans are getting fatter every year. And the problem is our doctors don't seem to have the answers. In fact, what many of our doctors and dietitians are telling you to eat may in fact be responsible for why you're fat in the first place. Please welcome back the best-selling author of Wheat Belly, Lose the Wheat, Lose the Belly, and Find Your Path Back to Health, Dr. William Davis. Now, Dr. Davis, we were discussing this off-air that this was not just a book you wanted to write for the sake of writing a book or making a few extra dollars. This was more of a mission for you. And before you explain that to us, it just seems so simplistic. Get rid of the wheat, but it's not that simplistic, because when you talk to the majority of people, number one, about, hey, all you need to do is eliminate wheat from your diet, the majority of them look at you with this blank expression, almost as if to say, well, what am I supposed to eat then?
Isn't that something? I think that it tells us just how deeply this message has, and forgive the pun, has been ingrained into people's thinking, that if we take out the bread and other wheat products, they think there's nothing left. There's, as you know, there's plenty of foods left. But it does mean, if we're going to avoid bread, rolls, pasta, etc., and the processed foods that contain wheat for appetite stimulation, I believe, we're left with real foods. We're left with mostly single-ingredient real foods. We're left with raw nuts, vegetables, meats, eggs, cheese, avocados, olives, olive oil, real foods. But that's where, so you compound the incredible benefits that come from eliminating wheat by then taking it a little farther and going back to whole real foods as well. So I call this a mission because when I started seeing what was happening, and now I've seen it many, many times, not just health improvement, but transformations. When I see someone lose 70 pounds in 6 months, and they could never have done it before, when I see people lose 14 inches from their waist, when I see incapacitating arthritis gone with no medicines, and people are walking, jogging, and dancing again, when I see people cancel their colon removal surgery and stop all their drugs for their inflammatory bowel disease, you realize this is not just a small issue of losing a few pounds. This is a life-transforming issue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one of the amazing things, there was a quote from your book that said, aside from some extra fiber, eating two slices of whole wheat bread is really little different and often worse than drinking a can of sugar-sweetened soda or eating a sugary candy bar.
Isn't that something?
That's unreal. No. You know, let's discuss the younger. Let's discuss children for a second here, because as I mentioned, they're extremely susceptible to dietary changes, and yet all the parents or the majority of parents, you know, we live in this go society, so you can't blame them for wanting to, you know, buy something processed that they believe could be healthy for their children, because that's what's said, you know, that's what's stated right on the label now. This is healthy for the heart. This is good for your kids. This is good for brain function. So they're giving them this processed wheat-based cereal. How serious is this for changing children's physiology and also their psychology?
I think I couldn't conceive, Brad, of a more destructive message than to have our kids eating this product of genetics research called wheat. We're seeing, of course, type 2 diabetes in children. Now, that's not just due to wheat, of course. That's also sugars and other carbohydrates. But wheat's a big player because wheat's the one mom gives them thinking it's healthy.
Sure.
There's also a parallel rise in type 1 diabetes. That doesn't make the headlines quite as much as type 2, but there actually has been a very dramatic rise in type 1 diabetes. By the way, if you watch those kids who develop type 1 diabetes average age 4, so we're talking about a long lifetime filled with struggles with type 1 diabetes. If you watch those kids with type 1 diabetes, they have a 20-fold greater chance of developing celiac disease. And likewise, children diagnosed with celiac disease because they're not growing have a 20-fold greater chance of developing type 1 diabetes. In other words, the evidence is getting pretty strong that type 1 diabetes and wheat are one and the same thing in many people.
Unbelievable. And we used to, you know, there's a lot of research or anecdotal evidence, so to speak, with drinking too much milk at an early age and that possibly being connected to type 1 diabetes in children as well. What is it, in your opinion, what is your research showing is the real problem? Is the problem the actual genetic modification of the wheat that's created the majority of the problem, or is it just wheat in general, or is it all genetically modified nowadays?
Well, actually, the changes introduced into wheat, that is the thing we're being sold today, this 2-foot-tall, not a 5-foot-tall, not a 4.5-foot-tall, but a 2-foot-tall, short, stocky plant called the semi-dwarf variant. This is very different from the wheat, say, 50 years ago or 1,000 years ago. So the wheat of today is a short, stocky, 2-foot-tall plant with 42 chromosomes. People often say to me, well, I have to eat wheat because bread's in the Bible. And that's true, but that's emmer wheat. That is a 28-chromosome plant. In other words, a chimpanzee is a lot closer to a human than modern wheat is to emmer wheat of the Bible. Einkorn wheat, that is of 10,000 years ago, the original granddaddy of wheat that was growing wild, is a tall plant also and is a 14-chromosome plant. So we're not talking about shades of difference. We're not talking about subtle changes in genetics. We're talking about incredible distances. The difference between an oak tree and a rose, we're talking about two completely
sure.
different plants, yet it all falls under the name of wheat. Now, the changes introduced into wheat more recently, the genetic changes, did not use genetic modification. That's an odd situation where corn and soy have been genetically modified, meaning the insertion or deletion of a gene, but wheat has not. They used far more crude and often bizarre techniques. So the odd thing, the odd irony, Brad, is that genetic modification would actually be an improvement.
Wow.
It did do.
So is that how the hybridization habits of wheat are so different from all these other plants?
I think it was, from the geneticist's viewpoint, fortuitous that they got these mutations. What they do is they try to breed plants to select out mutations. They might have to do it several hundred times to develop a certain characteristic like short stature, a two-foot-tall plant. But they also use techniques like chemical mutagenesis, that is exposing the wheat seed or embryo to toxic industrial compounds to induce mutations. They also use gamma irradiation and X-ray, high-dose X-ray radiation, to induce mutations. So it's really a process of inducing or selecting for mutations that they were using prior to the techniques of genetic modification. So what we are, in effect, eating is the product of genetics research to induce mutations.
And is a great deal of the wheat genetically modified nowadays? Because we know, like, you know, 93 to 95% of soy is genetically modified. It's very hard to find non-genetically modified soy or canola. Is it the same with wheat?
Actually, so there's no wheat currently on the market that has been genetically modified. That is, by using the formal definition of genetic modification.
Right.
But virtually all the wheat being sold has been genetically altered. To distinguish it from genetic modification, that is the product of these extensive hybridization and mutation-inducing practices. So virtually all the wheat, whether it's in a Twinkie or whether it's in a heavy loaf of multigrain bread, it's all the same.
Wow, so they can legally market a product, if I'm understanding correctly, as non-genetically modified, so to speak, because of that definition.
Isn't that something?
That's unbelievable. Right. I just want to mention one thing. We're out of time here, but, you know, these once again, these gluten-laden diets, and I know it's so much more than gluten again, but, you know, the ones that have caused what we know of as celiac disease to skyrocket, I mean, we used to believe 10 years ago it was 1 in 2,500 people. Today it's 1 in 133. But there was a report from the University of Chicago Celiac Disease Center. This was just a few years ago, and the research published was in the World Journal of Gastroenterology, and they found that more than 90% of random samples were sensitive to gluten in a blood test, suggesting that nearly everyone may be sensitive to wheat, even if symptoms aren't readily apparent. Dr. Davis, I want to thank you so much for being on the show and spreading this incredible, such an important message. I want to really, first of all, this is an incredible book. Go out, support this book, and pass this information on. The book is called Wheat Belly, Lose the Wheat, Lose the Belly, and Find Your Path Back to Health. Dr. Davis, where can people get information?
I conduct conversations on my blog that accompany the book, the Wheat Belly blog, and also lots of conversations on Facebook.
Facebook, and do you have a website?
The website is really the blog. The website for the heart disease prevention program is trackyourplaque.com.
Okay, and you can just Google Wheat Belly, Lose the Wheat, Lose the Belly. Dr. Davis, thank you so much for being my guest once again. All of you who listen to the show, thank you. Pass this information on. It is life-changing, as I'm sure you realize by now. And we will be back next week, same time, same place, with another incredible show, I promise you.